Anybody can be beat.
You're listening to the Brandon Dowling Show on.
Anybody can be beat.
You're listening to the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. Now here is your host, Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets.
And you are listening to another edition of the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. And man, oh man, do we have a jam-packed show for everybody tonight, as we will be joined by Christian Dyer from Metro and also Glenn Naughton from JetNation.com, who's been covering training camp for us. And I mean, this has been a training camp to remember and a training camp to forget for the Jets, depending on the way you look at it. We will dive into all things Jets talk. We'll dive into the preseason matchup tomorrow at MetLife Stadium, touch on a couple points from last week's preseason game. We'll look at, obviously, the Geno Smith debacle. I actually was not on the air last week due to the New York Jets game. We didn't want to conflict with, obviously, the Jets on Jet Nation Radio, so we postponed the show due to the timing of the game. So let's start off with some topics, and then what we will do is we'll wait for Christian to join us and obviously Glenn as well. We'll have them on the program tonight. First thing is, let's talk about Geno Smith. I haven't gotten to touch on this subject, and man, oh man, it is a tough one. I mean, I don't really know how you can look at this situation and, you know, make any type of justification from it. You know, here's a guy in Geno Smith that is fighting for his career right now with the New York Jets, fighting for an opportunity to be the man, to be the starting quarterback, and to take the next step in his career with the Jets. And then this happens. An altercation with IK, leading to him getting a broken jaw in his own locker room, out for 6 to 10 weeks. In my opinion, it's one of the most inexcusable things I've ever seen. So much for that positive offseason that Geno Smith was having. And it's almost like Geno Smith has kind of gone away now. I think that's the scary part, where everybody has kind of shifted gears to Ryan Fitzpatrick already. It's almost like Geno Smith is non-existent in terms of being around the Jets right now. If you're a Jet fan, nobody is sad that Geno Smith is not the starting quarterback right now. That's the scary part. Because he's supposed to be your leader of your team. And now he's a sideshow. You've got him throwing the football outside his apartment when he's not supposed to, which I think is ridiculous. You've got him in the papers with the jaw busted up. He's got the stuff under his eyes. He's making headlines for the wrong reasons. And that is the last thing the New York Jets have needed. This offseason, let me tell you, I know we talk about Todd Bowles, and I know we talk about Mike Maccagnan as being new guys and trying to change the image of the team. I mean, with this offseason, the Jets have had a lot of bad publicity, especially with Ibushi getting the suspension today. I mean, now you've gotten Ibushi suspension. You've gotten Richardson and that ridiculous drama. I mean, this has not been a dandy start to the Todd Bowles regime in terms of discipline. You know, that's definitely something to look into. Joining us here on the program for the first time on the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio is a good friend of ours, and that's Christian Dyer. Christian, how are you?
Good evening. How are you, Brandon?
I'm doing okay. So, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while as well. So, I mean, there's so much to dive into here. And, you know, my first question for you, obviously, is you've been covering Jets camp very close. You did break a report in regards to Geno Smith that he's most likely not going to be pressing charges against IK. So what do you make of that entire situation, and what's your thought behind it, and how do you see it affecting the Jets going forward?
Well, do you mind if I get the show started off with a bang, Brandon? Because I got a bone to pick with you. And that was a comment that you made just a couple moments ago about the Todd Bowles regime. Yeah, about the Todd Bowles regime not starting off in a strong way. I think this is more the Rex Ryan regime ending in a whimper. I mean, look at the guys who have been the issues over the past month. Sheldon Richardson, who had red flags coming out from college. There were issues. There were character questions. This guy took off plays. So that was certainly something. IK Inampali, somebody who was arrested when he was in college for punching out an off-duty police officer. Geno Smith, we all saw all the negatives with regards to Geno. And, the Nolan Norrock, absolutely scathing about his pedigree and ethic. There's now the latest issue is Ome Obusi. Again, another person signed by Rex Ryan, drafted by John Idzik. So I don't think this is an indictment on Todd Bowles. We're not seeing Darrell Revis getting into trouble. We're not seeing Stephen Ridley being a character issue. None of those types of things. But it's more the holdovers, the locker room holdovers from Rex Ryan and John Idzik.
Right, but I also look at it from the point of view where Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan are the guys in charge, and I think that, you know, they're the guys in charge, and this is their team now, and if they're going to make it their team, you know, they have to be held responsible for anything that happens with the New York Jets. You know, that's under their job description as a head coach and general manager. To blame a guy that's not even here anymore for players that are still on this roster, in my opinion, I think that's a little unfair. I think the head coach, you know, should have a better understanding of Sheldon Richardson and a better understanding of the type of person that he is and a better understanding of where he is and what he's doing, and then you wouldn't be in these type of situations.
Well, I would again disagree with you. I mean, would Todd Bowles have drafted Sheldon Richardson or IK or Ode Obusi and those types of personalities, given his own personality? We've heard it before, from Rex's own players. I mean, Trevor Price wrote a couple years ago saying very well, very eloquently, that Rex Ryan believed to a fault in his players, and sometimes that came back to bite him. And Rex Ryan thought he could get through to a Sheldon Richardson. He thought that he could get through to an IK and Impoli. Apparently, he still does, because he believes in this guy. But, we always say that you can't judge a president and his economy until it's at least 2 years. By the third year, it then becomes a president's economy. Why? Because he's left with the issues. You know, when President Obama came in, we were told not to judge him until the third year, when he could get out of the recession that the nation was in, that he was left holding, quote-unquote, everything. Yes, I was a political science minor in college, yes.
Okay, that was my first question. So my second question is, well, how many, in Rex Ryan's tenure here, can you remember a summer that when he was the head coach that he had two suspensions for drug abuse and an arrest?
Well, how about a season in 2010 where he had multiple issues ranging from Inez Sands to Braylon Edwards to his own foot fetish video and Sal Alossi and everything else.
Come on.
I mean,
those were issues that stemmed from Rex Ryan personnel. You're going down a dirty path.
If these were players that Todd Bowles had brought in, it'd be a very valid case. However, this is six years, which is an enormous amount of time in the NFL. This is 6 years of Rex Ryan's culture.
I guess
we're just going to have to agree to disagree and just agree that you're wrong. It's okay.
All right, no problem. I will agree that I'm wrong. I'll take the heat. You know what it is, Christian? I think it's the fact that I'm doing my own show now, so I don't have anybody to disagree with me. So the first time somebody disagrees with me, I have to kind of just keep talking until I can justify to myself that I'm right, because I just, when you're on the show by yourself, you get lonely sometimes, man. Like, there's nobody to talk to sometimes. So
let me tell you something. Sean Hannity was better with Alan Colmes, so this might be the beginning of your demise. Again, I'm showing my political science minor in college.
After a Sean Hannity reference, we are definitely moving on to the first question. Okay, so training camp. What have you seen so far? What have you seen so far that is jumping out at you? Obviously, you know, you broke the report with Geno Smith and the not pressing charges or potentially not pressing charges against IK. What do you make of the whole Geno Smith situation? And do you see him ever starting at quarterback for the Jets again?
Well, let's break it down first. The first part of the question was about who is standing out in training camp. Ironically, one of the names was IK, who looked very good individually one-on-one. He was comfortable moving in spaces, but I think there have been some good names out there, and some of the ones that have been hit were, you know, have been certainly Chris Owusu, looks like a very different player up until the concussion. It'll be interesting to see exactly how he factors in over the next couple games. I thought Shaq Evans has done some decent things. Quincy Anunua looks like a little bit more of a polished player. There's a lot of depth now at the wide receiver position. And then I think at safety, Jaquan Jarrett has done a very good job, really picking up where he left off last year. Very comfortable at that role. I think that he may, in many ways, be more ready to start than Calvin Pryor. I'm not sure he quite has the upside of a Calvin Pryor, but I think Jarrett has had a very good training camp. Instinctively, he's good. He's disciplined. He's a hard worker. His mother is a correctional facilities officer at Rikers Island, so he grew up with a very strong work ethic, but in a disciplined, strong home in Brooklyn. So I think those are some of the guys that have kind of stood out to me in particular. I know Trevor Riley's getting an awful lot of attention. I think he's looked better in many capacities than Lorenzo Maldon, the Jets' third-round draft pick this year. So there's a lot more depth on this team than any time in the past 4 or 5 years that I can think of. Now, going to your question about Geno there, Brandon, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next couple weeks with Geno, how he gets integrated. Personally, I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick has had a fairly good training camp. I think he showed little flashes of what he can be in the Detroit Lions game. I know it was 3 passes, but I think all of them were on the spot. I will say he gets the ball out of his hand faster than Geno Smith does. And the other thing he does is he lays the ball out there into space for a receiver to run into it. Too many times, even this training camp, I saw Geno throw behind a wide receiver. And in live action, that can be devastating to a wide receiver's career. So I think that maybe the Jets lose a certain amount of athleticism with Geno and some of the upside for the big plays that Geno's capable of making of. But I think the steady quarterback with a defense that could be a top-3 defense, Brandon, may be the recipe for this Jets team to get a winning record.
With Geno Smith, I mean, I've gone on, and my opinion with Geno Smith is this. I mean, when you look at the New York Jet fan base, you look at this organization, there's a lot of confidence in Geno Smith. I think if the Jets could have put something together that makes, you know, any type of sense, they would have gone up and gotten a quarterback in the draft last year. And, you know, Geno Smith is kind of in a position now where, you know, here you go. This is your year to show us that you have something. Otherwise, you're going to move on to a new quarterback in the future. And, you know, my thought process behind Geno Smith was, you know, you're not really playing with any expectations, because if week one comes, the fans are going to expect you to throw that first quarter interception. The fans aren't going to expect you to throw that first quarter touchdown. So I looked at Geno Smith kind of as, you know, it's all out there for you. There's no expectations. This is the year for you to just focus on playing football, and this is the year for you to show the team and the organization that you belong here. And, you know, and then this happens. And I look at the Matt Flynn signing. Very, very interesting signing by the Jets, because, I mean, realistically, the Jets already have 3 quarterbacks. You know, Bryce Petty's not going anywhere. You just signed him. I mean, you just drafted him as a rookie this year in the draft. Geno Smith, we know what's invested in him. And then you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who the Jets traded for, and he's the number one guy right now. So where do you think Matt Flynn fits in this roster, in this plan? Because the way I look at Matt Flynn, I see him as a guy that as soon as Geno Smith is back and healthy, he's not going to be on the Jets anymore.
Absolutely. Matt Flynn's tenure with the Jets ends as soon as Geno Smith is able to throw a football pass not outside of his own apartment complex. Once Geno's ready and healthy, he'll obviously replace Matt Flynn at this juncture. And I think it makes an awful lot of sense. If something happened to Ryan Fitzpatrick at some point this year while Geno is unable to play, I'm not sure if you're ready to hand the keys to the Porsche to to Bryce Petty or certainly Jake Heap, who I think has a very good shot of making the practice squad for the Jets, has an awful lot of upside. We've seen it. I think he's already shown more, perhaps, than Sims has shown over the past couple years. So there's a higher ceiling for Jake Heap, but Jake Heap isn't ready to start an NFL game. Bryce Petty is not ready to start an NFL game. He didn't come out of a pro-style offense in college. So I think the Flynn situation is a very good rental for about a month, month and a half or so. He gives you something. Maybe he shows well perhaps he even is able to usurp, although I don't think it's likely, but able to usurp Ryan Fitzpatrick at the starter. I mean, the guy has a certain amount of talent. He didn't get $20.5 million from the Seattle Seahawks because they didn't think he was a good quarterback. It's just been, has Matt Flynn been able to put it together over the course of his career? And he hasn't.
I mean, that right there is amazing. What am I doing wrong where a guy that's probably played, you know, almost over a handful of football games has made $20 million? That's a head scratcher right there in itself. Now, with training camp, obviously we've talked about the positives. What is the biggest disappointments you've seen so far out of Jets training camp?
Very difficult to talk about the offensive line and the defensive lines, given the way that, you know, the modern NFL training camp is being run with such little hitting. I haven't seen a whole lot from Jeremy Curley this year, and I know that's surprising. I'm a big fan of Jeremy Curley and what he can bring to the table. I've called him Mr. Third Down because it seemed like almost every time over the last half of the year the Jets needed a third down, it was Jeremy Curley getting it for them. But he really hasn't shown that spark. I don't know if it's something on the field, off the field, he feels disconnected. Maybe he felt the Devin Smith draft pick really has worked against him. But there should be a role on this team for Jeremy Curley outside of just being a punt returner. And I think, you know, just the fact that we haven't seen him break some of those big plays in the first preseason game in training camp is a stark contrast to years past. And keeping it on the offensive side of the ball, it's been disappointing to me to see Jace Amaro. He talked about his blocking having improved, and perhaps it has a little bit, but just his route running doesn't seem as crisp. He's not sitting in the pockets quite as well, and I know he certainly has the injury right now to get back with, but you're beginning to wonder, does this guy have the potential to put it all together? Physically, he's not as imposing as you might like to see from a tight end. He's certainly not one of those big target tight ends that we've kind of seen prototypically drafted over the past few years, the Gronkowski, Graham type that can flex out and be so effective in isolation. He's had a very disappointing training camp. And on the defensive side of the ball, to me, it's been none other than Antonio Cromartie, who is maybe the fourth best cornerback on the roster right now. Now it's training camp. He may just be kind of easing his way into it. He might be working some things out. Certainly it's hard to tell from the first preseason game with the amount of cushion that all the cornerbacks were giving to the Detroit Lions. But right now, Cromartie, who was always a surplus signing to me and never made a whole lot of sense this offseason, is somebody who I wouldn't be surprised if next year he's not on the Jets. When you look at the way his salary numbers are structured, it is made that there is zero cap hit against him next year. So the Jets could easily free up $8 or $9 million with which to retain Muhammad Wilkerson next year, Damon Harrison, be able to kind of, you know, make some of those pursuits if they need to go out and get a quarterback for a year or two. They're going to have some of that money because the way Antonio Cromartie is playing in training camp right now, his athleticism is starting to wane. And Cromartie was never a technique-heavy cornerback. And now that his physical skill set's diminishing, I think we're beginning to see that he can be exposed just a little bit more.
That's interesting because, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, the Jets signed him because of how well he played last year. I mean, maybe it's too early to tell, and that's the type of veteran that, you know, will turn it on when the real game starts.
It might well be.
Right. I mean, that's the only thing that I could even justify saying about Antonio Cromartie, because I think the Jets do have high hopes for him based off of, you know, why they gave him the money that they did and why they brought him in here and the way he played last year. Next question for you is, you've been covering training camp now for the Jets. You've seen Rex Ryan's training camp. Now you've seen a little bit of Todd Bowles' training camp. What differences do you see in the two coaches and the two staffs and the players' reactions to it? You know, basically, what difference do you see in a training camp run by Todd Bowles and a training camp run by Rex Ryan?
And I was here the final year of Eric Mangini as well. So, you know,
all right, so throw him
the Mangini era, which kick-started my Jets writing career. but with all that being said, I think you look at Todd Bowles' camp, and it's very efficient. What impressed me is, you know, these periods usually last 10 or 15 minutes, and the guys kind of went field, which we've seen with Mangini and we've seen with Rex, and we're seeing now with Todd Bowles. But it seems like there's a sense of purpose. The coaching staff knows what they're going to do. There's not as much confusion. There seems to be a clear-cut game plan that's lined out. And I think that's making it efficient. It's making practice go a lot crisper, physical. There's an awful lot of conditioning going on. Bowles purposely chose early afternoon to be the hottest time so that his team's in the best shape. But it's interesting that the classy New York Giants across town chose evening time, so it's a little bit cooler for some of their players. Listen, this is a young team. It's a team that's coming off a head coach that was very, you know, player-friendly in Rex Ryan. And now they're getting a little bit of a taste of reality and what a training camp is really going to look like and feel like. And work ethic is being imposed a little bit more. From a player perspective, the word I keep hearing about Todd Bowles is accountability. These guys love the fact that there seems to be a standard. And I liken it to
that's
children
ironic.
Sometimes. Children, you know, so many parents. So, yeah, it is. And, you know, it's children will say that, oh, they wish they had cool parents, but sometimes deep down they really want to know where they stand and where the rules are, and it creates less confusion and fewer issues. So I think the fact that Todd Bowles has a certain amount of accountability brought in, guys are fined if they're late for meetings, fined if they have practices, there's consequences, you know, if there are fights in practices, things like that, really is going to be a good trickle down. Now, Todd is going to need a long time, and by that I mean at least one full NFL season, to be able to get the locker room, get his guys in there that he wants, and kind of clean out a little bit of the issues and the headaches from the past regime. So I'm not ready to judge him quite yet for everything with Sheldon Richardson and IK and Ode Ibushi, just like a certain host of this podcast is ready to already run him out of town. But I do think that Todd has the Jets pointed in the wrong direction, and I love you, Brandon.
I mean, I'm not ready to run anybody out of town. I'm not ready to run anybody out of town. But I just want to have Todd Bowles take some accountability here and his players getting suspended and players getting punched in the face and players going out and, you know, drag racing with 12-year-olds in the car with their cars smelling like Woodstock. I mean that's what I want. I want some accountability from the coach. But last question for you. Tomorrow night, second preseason game. We saw the first preseason game. What do you want to see? What should we expect to see that's different, and what are we hoping to see?
I'm just hoping and praying that Ryan Fitzpatrick gets this Jets offense into the end zone. I don't want the past 2 years where we're going into the fourth preseason game saying, who's going to get the Jets into the end zone? Is someone going to get this team to score a touchdown? I want to see Ryan Fitzpatrick lead at least one good touchdown drive, two scoring drives from this game. And I want the defense to actually step up and start tackling somebody. I mean, it looked like they were chasing one of those greased pigs around out there against Detroit. The amount of missed tackles, the poor execution, the terrible angles that they took on tackling. I think that this is somewhat the byproduct of the new NFL rules where tackling is really sound. And I think a defense where you've got some new personnel pieces coming in, there might have been some communication errors, but if the tackling issues persist going into game three, I'll start to be a little concerned. But I'm willing to give a pass for former defensive coordinator, now a head coach, that he's going to get this team tackling sooner rather than later.
Christian, always a pleasure having you on the program, especially tonight. It's always fun. This is Christian Dyer from Metro, New York newspaper sports columnist, also on Yahoo and on MSG Networks. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian R. Dyer. In my opinion, the best writer for the New York Jets and beat reporter out there, even though he argues with me on the show. Christian, always a pleasure. Look to have you back on during the season, hopefully for some positive Jets talk.
Listen, Brandon, it's going to be a very positive season for the Jets. I'm convinced of that. So I think we'll have some positive Jets talk sooner rather than later. This is a good team, and you feel the franchise is going in the right direction. McCagnan's impressive. Foles is impressive. So I don't think we're going to have to search too hard for positive Jets talk down the road.
Oh, I mean, I live for positive Jets talk. Again, this is Christian R. Dyer. Give him a follow on Twitter. Christian, always a pleasure, my man.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. That was Christian Dyer from Metro. And we're going to dive right into it because it's training camp, ladies and gentlemen. We're diving right into Glenn Naughton. He is the reporter for JetNation.com at training camp. Glenn, my man, how are you?
Good. How you doing, man?
Good. So, you know, I'm going to jump right into it. You know, it's kind of similar questions for you. I just asked Christian Dyer, who's been at Jets training camp. You know, the first kind of thing that we went back and forth on was, you know, he disagreed with me, you know, in my thought process behind the fact that, you know, that Todd Bowles, you know, has to have some kind of accountability for the issues that have gone on off the field for the Jets this offseason, you know, with Sheldon Richardson and his suspension and then also the arrest. And now you got the Abushi suspension today. So the Jets have had, you know, a really kind of rough offseason off the field and in the papers so far. You know, and I was just looking, and especially with obviously the Geno Smith situation, you know, their own starting quarterback getting their jaw broken in the locker room. I mean, at some point in time, I think we have to take a look, and the coach has to take some accountability for it. You know, his thought process behind it was, well, you know, this is just, you know, the end of the Rex Ryan type players. And I don't think that. I think that, you know, any coach that takes over a team is responsible for the group of men that he's coaching and leading, and it's his responsibility to make sure that things like this don't happen.
Well, I agree with you. It is such a crazy situation, but this is the stuff that happens to the Jets. I think, you know, right now, in terms of how Todd Bowles is viewed, he's benefiting from what happened under Rex Ryan, because even though things right now under him are worse than they ever were in terms of player conduct, I mean, you know, Rex had, you know, the stuff you hear of the DUI with Braylon and, you know, one positive PED test with Kellen Winslow, who was on a team for a season. You know, I've heard people mention Goodson, which to me, I don't think that guy had even had a practice with the Jets when he got in trouble. So that was a bit of a stretch. But it's just, you know, with the culture that existed under Rex, there are a lot of people that feel like, you know, Todd Bowles does get a free pass at this point because of the fact that Rex's locker room was out of control. But, I mean, let's be honest, it was never nearly this bad. But I think because everything else is going so well and they haven't lost a game yet, everyone's giving them a free pass. But I guarantee you, if this team starts out 1-3 or 1-4, you're going to be hearing the same things about the inmates running the asylum that you were hearing under Rex. You're going to be hearing it about Todd Bowles. Hopefully not. You know, hopefully this is the end of it. But, you know, to be honest, I feel like this is a weekly occurrence now. It's a matter of just waiting to find out who the latest guy is to get suspended or arrested. So hopefully they can clean this thing up. And a lot of it, too, is the timing. You know, we're hearing that the Abushi thing was some time ago during the offseason. It's not like all these things are happening right now as we speak. So it's been an eventful and unfortunately an ugly few weeks for the Jets that hopefully they can bounce back from.
Right. And I think that one of the other reasons why I loop Todd Bowles in, and you have to bring up Todd Bowles, is the fact that this guy was brought in here not only to lead the team and be the new head coach of the Jets, but because they wanted to completely do a 360 on the image of the head coach of the team. And that was, you know, bringing a guy who's a disciplinarian, who doesn't take anybody's, you know, crap, doesn't want to talk to the media, doesn't want his players talking to the media, has everybody, you know, the old mentality, if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late. You know, that's the type of guy that Todd Bowles is. Well, if you're that type of guy, how do you explain the Sheldon Richardson situation? How do you explain the Geno Smith situation? How do you explain the second Sheldon Richardson situation? How do you explain the Abushi situation? You know, you're the head coach of this team. You're supposed to be the disciplinarian that everybody respects and that everybody, you know, follows. And this is the result. You know, as much as Rex Ryan was criticized for, you know, letting everybody run the team and being such a player's coach that everybody was out of control, you know, I asked Christian the same question. When was there ever an offseason for the Jets that you can remember this many things happening at one time? I can't.
No, no. And like I said, this is as bad as this is worse than it's ever been, honestly, that I can remember. I mean, you know, every team, you go back, you look through the league, every team has their bad apples, guys get arrested, guys get DUIs, that kind of stuff goes on. But events, you know, of this magnitude, you know, so many in a row, of course, both of them were one guy in Sheldon Richardson, but still just a really weird, weird situation where it really is some uncharted territory. But I think, you know, like I said, I think that's where Todd Bowles is benefiting from Rex Ryan's time here. There are people looking at it going, oh, well, this is Rex's fault. This is, you know, Todd Bowles hasn't had time to instill his values and his ways on the team. Whereas I kind of look at it that I agree with you. If he was brought in and that was one of his main purposes was to straighten these guys out, this should have been taken care of during OTAs. He should, you know, hey, you sheriff in town, I know this stuff flew in the past. And we heard it. We heard it during OTAs. You know, Jason Morrow and other players came out and said, oh, it's different under this guy. No one's going to mess around. You can't be out of step. You got to be on time. You can't miss meetings. That stuff's not going to be tolerated anymore. So it was instilled. Right. He stood up and said it. The players knew it. The players heard it. The players repeated it. They told the fans. They told the media, this guy's not going to mess around. And then they go out and they just go on this wild, really unbelievable streak that, again, I've said it, this stuff only happens to the Jets. You know, you got your quarterback getting knocked out while Richardson's, you know, committing multiple crimes at one time, you know, and we find out minutes after, you know, after he tells the media it's not going to happen again with the pod suspension and now Ibushi. It really is. I feel like every 7 to 10 days there's a new news story where the Jets are, you know, somebody's getting in trouble for doing something stupid. And this is months after, you know, again, they've had OTAs. They've had several weeks of training camp. And we've been hearing from day one, this guy has, he's put his mark on the team and he's let us know that this type of behavior won't be tolerated. And everyone still feels comfortable doing it. And there are still people saying, hey, that's Rex Ryan's fault. So, you know, it's one of those things where Bowles is getting a free pass on this because of Rex. But like I said, a game hasn't been played yet. I really like Todd Bowles. I like his demeanor. I do think he was a good choice. But if this team starts out 1-4, 1-5, you know, maybe he gets a little more rope than that. I don't know how much he should get because, in all honesty, this is on paper the most talented Jets roster I've seen in I don't know how long. You know, of course, minus the quarterback position. But even now, you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's, you know, statistically, you look at his career, he's light years ahead of anything, you know, the Jets had when they went to those two AFC championship games, and the defense is better. So there should be some big expectations. So if this team starts slow, all these fans right now that are saying it's Rex's fault and it's, you know, you can't, Bowles just got here, let them win, you know, one out of the first 6 or 7 games, and everybody's going to say, oh, something's never changed. This guy has no control over the team. There's no discipline. And it's going to be the same old story. That's the way it goes.
I mean, what's funny is how can you blame a guy who's not even here? I mean, and then you just look at the facts. I mean, the facts are that this is the worst, you know, in terms of a summer, the worst that we've ever seen with player discipline. And, you know, I don't care if that, you know, if you want to talk about the way that he was doing it before and you want to say, well, all these players, you know, he's only been here for a short period of time. If you're the disciplinarian type of coach that people say you are, you should get those players' attention the second you call them on the phone and say, hey, this is Todd Bowles. I'm the new head coach of the Jets. From that point on, these players and this team is your responsibility. Take accountability for it. Take accountability for your actions. Take accountability for your players and don't make excuses for it. And the same goes for the fans. You would be ridiculous to say that you can blame this on Rex Ryan. I don't care about Rex Ryan. He's no longer anything to the Jets except for a team that they have to play twice a year. So don't blame it on the coach. It's the coach's accountability. It's the coach's fault because the coach gets paid to make sure that these things don't happen. As much as these guys are grown men and as much as they're professional athletes, the part of the coach's job description is to babysit the players on his team to prevent this from happening.
Well, I will say that, like I said, I do agree to a point, but as far as that goes, I've always said, you know, it's my opinion, and this is just because, you know, from personal experiences, I don't feel like a coach, any coach, can go out and babysit 53 guys at one time, at this point, 90
no.
guys at one time. But
no.
to the other side, where I agree more, anybody out there, anybody who's got a job, we all know that, you know, if you get a new job, a new boss, a new supervisor, and the new guy
yeah.
comes in and says, here's my way, and it's my way or the highway, you tighten up and you say, hey, I got to be in my best behavior until I find out, you know, where the lines are with this guy.
Right.
So the fact that Todd Bowles walked in and said, here are the lines, and these guys just went completely out of them and said, we don't care. It's troubling, you know. And I'm not saying it's Bowles' fault, because I do feel like these are grown men. He's not there to tell Sheldon Richardson not to drive 143 miles an hour. Sheldon Richardson made a foolish mistake, you know, and really several
right.
foolish mistakes at once. So it's even hard to call it a mistake. I mean, really, it was just, you know, several cases of neglect where he made a lot of bad decisions
yep.
at one time. So to me, that's on the grown man Sheldon Richardson. Todd Bowles can only do so much. So the same way I thought it was silly to blame Rex for guys, you know, for when Braylon gets a DUI, I think it's silly to say, well, Todd Bowles should have been there to stop Sheldon from getting that DUI. Todd Bowles should have been there to stop Ode Abouche from using. No, they're grown men. They're going to do it. But at the same time, I think it is hypocritical to say, well, it's okay that this is happening under Bowles because he's new and it's Rex's fault. He put a stamp on the team when he walked in the door. We heard from the players that everything was better now and there was going to be discipline and accountability, and it's like Animal House. So, you know, here's the hoping that this is the last time we're talking about something like this and we get a couple of weeks of sanity and no breaking of any rules or laws or nobody heading to prison.
Oh, I agree. I'm not sitting here blaming Todd Bowles. I just think that he has to somehow be looped into the fact of what we're seeing. I mean, he can't just be completely under the radar. Again, you know, the Christian was saying that the word that they're preaching at Jets camp is accountability. Well, with this type of player discipline problem, the coach has to take some accountability. Do I think that he could have been there to stop these things from happening? Of course not. Of course not. Anybody makes their own decisions. That's life. But, you know, it's a matter of you're the coach of the football team. You're a disciplinarian type coach. You were brought in here to change the culture. You need to do a better job of it. And even though you've been here, you haven't even started the regular season yet, I look at it as accountability. He has to take some of it. And I'm sure if you ask Todd Bowles, he would probably agree with you. He would probably say, yeah, a lot of this, you know, I should take more accountability for and have control of my locker room, especially the Geno Smith situation. The fact that the starting quarterback got punched in the mouth and a broken jaw in their own locker room, to me, is disgusting. It's disgusting. I think it's embarrassing. I think this is the first time ever that a starting quarterback is going to be out for 6 to 10 weeks because he got punched in the face by a backup linebacker. I mean, that's embarrassing. It's one of the most embarrassing Jet stories I've ever read, and you and I both know, Glenn, there have been a lot of them. So
absolutely.
Let's move on to training camp. You've been last there at training camp. So we spoke to Christian about the things that he saw that he liked. What have you seen that you like?
Well, hoping I don't repeat too much of what Christian said. I tuned in a little bit late, but the things that have jumped out at me, and especially the last couple sessions, and you know, again yesterday, is the play of Jeremy Curley right now. You know, it looks like he was under the impression, or not under the impression, his job was in jeopardy. Because Quincy Enunwa was stepping up. He's been very impressive as well. But Jeremy Curley, you know, very quick in and out of his routes, really, you know, the really sure hands that we're accustomed to. He kind of disappeared for most of last season, but most of the offense disappeared last year, and that comes down to, you know, erratic quarterback play a lot of the time. You know, you go back and there's plenty of film you can watch from last season when there were open receivers. They just weren't getting the ball delivered on target. So, you know, that was definitely a contributing factor. But Curley has looked excellent the last couple sessions. Quincy Enunwa, I've discussed with a couple of folks. He's looked really good. And, you know, a player I really like. He's got good size, good prototypical wide receiver size. Kid out of Nebraska. And again, I know we're all hearing about Trevor Riley, how great he's looked. You know, he's getting pressure on the quarterback. Of course they're not sacks because it's, you know, it's non-contact, but he's being credited with sacks, with pressures. Jason Babbins looked pretty solid, you know, for a veteran who's on the bubble. Marcus Williams has done a really good job. And Calvin Pryor even, you know, he hasn't had an amazing camp, but he did have a practice a couple sessions ago where he made the best play I've ever seen him make with a dive and grab over the middle. But let's face it, you look at the way he played last year and the way he played in that one drive against Detroit, you know, this is a guy that you have to ask is he going to maintain his starting position based solely on draft position, or is he a guy they're going to move on from if he gets outplayed? Because he's made so many mistakes in the early going that if he doesn't turn it around, I don't know how he sticks. Outside of that, the one or two really good plays I've seen from him in camp, I haven't seen a lot of good. But you know, in fairness, for anyone who's been out to camp can attest, you know, there's three fields. There's so much going on. You can only watch so much at once. So from what I've been able to see, those are the guys that have really impressed me. It's really hard to read the offensive line from the angles you get, but from what little I can tell, it seems like a lot of nice runs seem to be springing from that left side. And with that in mind, you know, I've been hearing a lot from other analysts talking about how impressive James Carpenter has been. And he's a guy that I thought was a huge question mark. I know he came from Seattle. Everyone was psyched about that, but he did struggle at times. I watched a lot of film on him after they just signed him, and he had Russell Wilson, you know, running for his life quite a bit. But, you know, with Russell Wilson's mobility, he was able to escape a lot of those missed blocks by Carpenter. But we have heard Carpenter come out and say recently that the zone scheme that Seattle utilized didn't work to his strengths, and he feels like this is a better system for him. And I think we're seeing that early on from him as well.
You know, interesting point that you brought up. Now, you thought that Jeremy Curley was one of your, you know, things that you saw that you liked in training camp so far, and he's impressed you. Christian Dyer actually mentioned that Jeremy Curley was one of his disappointments. What do you think he was, you know, touching on, or do you just disagree with the fact that, you know, he thinks that Jeremy Curley has, you know, almost taken a lesser role with the Jets and has not shown as much?
Well, it could be, you know, in terms of the big picture, he did start out slow, and he was a disappointment. You know, the first couple sessions I went up there, he didn't jump out to me the way he has the last couple sessions, and specifically this past weekend, and then again yesterday, on a lot of the one-on-one stuff, and you know, a lot of the team stuff too. He seemed to be playing a lot sharper, and you know, I'm out there observing for Jet Nation. I'm a fan. I don't ever proclaim myself to be a pro talent evaluator or a scout, but a lot of the stuff I do see, I like to go double check, you know, and see if what my eyes are telling me is right. And I've seen a lot of opinions saying that since Curley came out and said that he realized he was going to be fighting for his job, that he has stepped it up. Somebody the other day, I forget who it was, said that he was virtually uncoverable in one-on-ones, and he put a move on Buster Screen yesterday on an out route where he just pivoted and shot toward the sideline. And I mean, he left Buster Screen behind him. So I feel like early on, I didn't see a lot from him, but the last few practices, he seems to have really stepped it up.
Well, that's good. Now, in terms of your disappointments, what disappointment have you seen so far at training camp?
So far, again, I hate to sound like a broken record because I know everybody's saying it right now, but Antonio Cromartie, he struggled so much that it has to, even though it is training camp, it opens your eyes a little bit. But there is that part of you that wonders if he's a veteran who's kind of taking it easy a little bit. He did make a couple plays yesterday. He had a pick six. He had a nice pass broken up. You know, he's flashed here and there, but he's not been as consistent as you would expect Antonio Cromartie to be, a player of his stature and a guy who was brought in at that price tag. You know, of course, it's a four-year deal. It's essentially a one-year with nothing guaranteed beyond this season. But Cromartie, he struggled. But, you know, to me, the bit of hope there is that he's literally on a lot of the plays, a lot of the catches he's given up, he's right there. It's not like guys are burning him and you know, leaving him in the dust. But he's right there on a lot of these catches. And I've even, you know, when I've been at camp tweeting, because I know people are all over Cromartie at the moment, I've kind of tried to clarify in a few. You know, there have been a few where the receiver just made an amazing play. And Cromartie,
right,
you know, was right there to defend it, and he didn't get the job done, which is, you know, of course, that's what counts at the end of the day. But at the same time, early in practice yesterday, going one-on-one against Eric Decker put a double move on him. He faked outside and cut to the inside, and Cromartie essentially just stopped. I think the second Eric Decker made that second cut, Cromartie knew he was beaten. He didn't even move, and Eric Decker took it inside for a score. So that's been the biggest disappointment so far for me personally. Again, Calvin Pryor, I was hoping to see something from him where you could say, okay, he's making plays now. He did have, you know, again, the one play he made last weekend. But other than that, relatively quiet. The thing that I have liked, I've commented on previously, is is the amount of communication going on between Pryor and the other defensive backs, guys like Gilchrist and Cromartie. They're pulling him aside and trying to coach him up a little bit, which is what you want to see. You know, last season you kind of look around and everybody was either an undrafted free agent or a guy with only a couple of starts under his belt, and you're kind of saying, who's going to bring the young guys along, because you don't have that veteran in the secondary in the huddle. Of course, you have Juan Landry safety, but, you know, in terms of corners, you didn't really have anybody. So now this season with Revis there, again, Gilchrist, as I mentioned the other day, played corner in college, now converted to safety. So, he, you know, that type of guy might be able to help bring a Calvin Pryor along. So hopefully, you know, he can get out of this funk and not be in a position where he's looking at losing a job to a new regime.
Now, obviously, we have the first preseason game behind us tomorrow, the second game, 7:30 at MetLife Stadium against the Atlanta Falcons. What are you looking for, you know, as in terms of the biggest difference between the first preseason game and the second preseason game? What are you hoping for to see, and what do you think you're going to see?
Well, I think Christian hit it on the head. You know, we got to see better tackling. That was a pretty poor display, and I get that it's the preseason, but it didn't, you know, you hear that a lot, you know, it's early on and, you know, we need some time, but the other team wasn't doing that. They didn't seem to have a hard time catching anybody who had the ball in their hands and making a tackle. There were some bad angles. You know, Calvin Pryor, unfortunately, death in the family, so he won't be present. So, you know, I was hoping to see a bounce-back performance from him. But honestly, it's the guy who could end up replacing him eventually, Jaquan Jarrett. You know, we saw him last year. He played sparingly, but when he did, he played really well. So, you know, I want to see how he steps up running with the ones with, you know, obviously much better secondary, much better support than what he had last season when he was on the field. So I want to see how Jaquan Jarrett looks with him out. And I'm curious, I want to see that offensive line again. I thought that was one of the better parts of the game last week was the run blocking up front, and we're going to get to see them for a full half rather than just a couple of drives. And then, of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, getting his first extended action rather than, you know, I think, what, 2 for 3 last week. And his targets, you know, I'll tell you, these receivers that he's throwing to in camp, some of these guys can burn. So, I mean, the T.J. Graham and Akeem, even though Akeem isn't quite as polished as Graham, but they have some speedy guys. Wall Powell is a lot faster than advertised, at least in person. The stuff I was able to find on him online has some pretty slow 40 times listed, but he's been getting behind people, so he's a lot faster than he gets credit for. And again, the guy I mentioned earlier, Quincy Enunwa, if he's fighting for this number 3 spot, he only had one opportunity last week, and they put the ball in his hands and he dropped it. You know, he can't do that. Todd Bowles said it. He said this is a guy who's playing really well, but he's got to do it consistently. You know, that's the difference between sticking with the team or getting playing time or being a practice squad guy. So he's got the physical tools. He just needs that little bit of polishing. So I want to see if he can carry over these performances he's had in training camp and see if he can do that in the game. Because I'll tell you what, if he starts playing in the real games like he has in camp, you add him to this list of receivers and the Jets are going to have something special. So those are the guys that I'm most looking forward to see.
Last question for you, Glenn, and we're talking with Glenn Naughton. He's a reporter for JetNation.com covering training camp for the New York Jets. The signing of Matt Flynn, what does it mean to you, if anything? You know, do you see Matt Flynn as any more than a player that's taking a roster spot right now for Geno Smith? You know, when Geno Smith becomes healthy and can start playing football again, do you see Matt Flynn even being on this team, or do you see him being here right now basically just to fill a roster spot?
I think he's here to fill a roster spot till Geno's back. I think it would take a pretty miraculous effort on the part of Flynn and Chan Gailey. I mean, I've spoken at great length several times on the great work Gailey has done with some subpar quarterbacks, but this is a guy who couldn't make it. And, you know, he had years. He was in an ideal situation. He spent years with McCarthy under Aaron Rodgers for years, you know, an opportunity to develop his game, and we didn't see that. You know, as much as people talk about how Ryan Fitzpatrick has played for, you know, 5-6 teams and over his career, Matt Flynn's matched that in the last 3 years. You know, he just keeps bouncing around from roster to roster. He couldn't cut it with the Raiders. He didn't stick with Seattle, who gave him a ton of money, and then they let him go. So everywhere he's been, you know, Bill Belichick had him most recently. I mean, it's quite the scenario where you have this guy who obviously some of the brightest minds in the game think enough of him to bring him in, which should carry some weight on its own, but then they never keep him around. So which one is it? You know, there's something there that these guys like, but something about when they get to see him up close and personal, they're happy to let him go. You know, if you have a quarterback in this league who can play a lick, you don't let him go because he's got a sore hamstring, you know, which is the reason New England gave. So it's for that reason and that reason alone. You know, anytime I'm doubtful of a Jets player, of course, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he comes in and he works with Gailey and gets his head on straight and he competes for to get himself in a position to contribute. But just based solely on history, you know, again, picked up by some of the best coaches in the NFL and dropped within a season or two by those same coaches. So they're seeing something in him from afar that they like, but something up close that they don't. So for that reason, I would think he's not going to be around that long.
Glenn, always a pleasure, my man. Keep up the great work at Jets training camp. You going to the game tomorrow?
That's still up in the air. About a 90% chance I'll be there.
Sounds good, man. I'll be there as well. So maybe we'll catch up at the game tomorrow. Keep up the good work, man, and keep doing your thing.
Same to you. Take care, Brandon. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Glenn. That was Glenn Naughton, JetNation.com. I mean, great points. Great points from two great guys, Christian Dyer and Glenn Naughton from JetNation.com. I mean, I thought it was interesting how Glenn brought up the fact that Jeremy Kruller has been a standout. Christian brought up the fact that he was a disappointment. I mean, that just goes to tell you that it's football knowledge and football opinions. One person can see something that another person can't. I thought one thing that Christian Dyer touched on that was very interesting, you know, obviously besides the Todd Bowles back and forth, was Geno Smith. You know, he wasn't really too down on Geno. He definitely had the same viewpoint as Glenn in terms of Matt Flynn. I do too. I mean, I don't see how Matt Flynn comes close to making this roster and when Geno Smith is ready to go. I think you look at it from the point where, you know, Bryce Petty's not going anywhere. Geno Smith is not going anywhere. Ryan Fitzpatrick's not going anywhere. And Matt Flynn probably knows that as well. Coming in here, he doesn't think that he's going to be here very long, but it's an NFL football team, and it's a chance to do some good in the preseason. You know, Matt Flynn gets in the third or fourth preseason game, and he shows some signs of life. Maybe another team will pick him up, or maybe he'll beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick. Crazier things have happened for the New York Jets. Also, if you do want to go to the game tomorrow night, check out StubHub for Jets tickets and also JetNation.com. People sell tickets all the time. I mean, the tickets right now for tomorrow's game, put it to this way, I got two tickets for tomorrow's game for $16 total. So, I mean, it is a preseason game. You are going to see, you know, a practice game that doesn't really mean anything, but you do get to go see the New York Jets. You go get to see Ryan Fitzpatrick perform and see how he does in a first half of football. And you get an experience of taking the family out for a cheap price to go see the Jets. I would definitely check it out if you have any interest in the game tomorrow. The tickets are, you know, even for a preseason game, are cheaper than I've really ever seen them. I mean, you could get tickets upstairs if you give somebody a dollar. So, not a bad time to experience some MetLife Stadium and some football, and especially with the New York Jets. You know, got about 6 minutes left in the program. Call line is 646-716-4697. Not a lot of time for callers tonight, as we had Christian Dyer and Glenn Naughton on tonight, you know, talking about Jets training camp. Again, a couple things that they brought up. Glenn liked the wide receiving core. He liked the Owusu. He liked Jeremy Kruller. He liked Walter Powell, and he also liked Hakeem. So I think that that's interesting. And T.J. Graham as well. He said there's a lot of speedy guys. Christian Dyer brought up the fact that Shaq Evans is really impressing him. So you're hearing different opinions, especially about these wide receivers. I mean, there's a lot of spots to be taken for these wide receivers. There's a lot of different position openings. There's a lot of different position battles. So I thought that was very, very interesting as well from both of these guys. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up, talk about the preseason game tomorrow, what I think there is to expect, and what we should see and look for in the preseason game tomorrow. Back after this.
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio.
Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. Pack in the wind, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever slack up, punk, you better back up. Try and play the role and you're the whole crew will act up. Get up.
Are you a business trying to get the word out about your goods? Or an organization seeking to make the world a better place? Or a band promoting a new tour or debut EP? How do you keep up with the ever-evolving world of social media? Craft your message and make sure it gets to the right people. The answer is the Strategic Pizza. The Strategic Peacock takes pride in helping organizations create and implement online strategies that appropriately target the right audience with the right information, using the right media. From mobile to multimedia, the Strategic Peacock will enhance your online presence. Visit strategicpeacock.com to develop the right web strategies for success.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I'm here to talk about a serious problem. Your children are listening to bad music. They go home, turn on the radio, and get down with their bad selves. You think it's harmless. You think it's just them being a teenager. You're wrong. Nothing is as harmful or addictive as bad music. Soon your kids will start thinking bad music is good, and the world will be filled with only bad music. So talk to your children about the dangers of bad music and tell them about the cure, Indie Outbreak. Indie Outbreak features a huge selection of great indie artists fighting against the bad music plague. Good music to save their minds. Join with us at IndieOutbreak.com, and together we can help stop the spread of bad music.
New music.
Are you an independent artist? Do you struggle with getting music out there without burning a hole in your pocket? The Indie Outbreak is the perfect radio show for you. Broadcasted around the world, heard by thousands of incredible fans, always on demand. You can be too. Interested in being part of the outbreak? Go to IndieOutbreak.com and click the Submit tab for details. Be part of the epidemic sweeping over the world. Indie Outbreak. IndieOutbreak.com.
Amazing.
Anybody can be beat!
You're listening to the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. Now here is your host, Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets!
And we are back off the lake here on the Brandon Dowling Show. Just a few quick points on the preseason game tomorrow. So the second preseason game, now you have a little bit more of a feel for it in terms of the players, what to expect. The first game jitters are out of their system. So now it's time to experience some positive football from the New York Jets, especially from the quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's one thing I want to see tomorrow is the Jets get in the end zone. Like Christian Dyer said, you want to see the Jets get in the end zone. You want to see them make strides on offense with Chan Gailey's system. Definitely want to see better tackling and defense not get shredded like they did in the first part of the game last week against the Lions. So I think one thing you want to see, your first preseason game at home, everybody's going to be excited. The Jets are back. They're in football. Football is back in general. I think everybody will be excited tomorrow at the stadium. Again, you can get tickets for cheap online if you want to try and go to the game tomorrow. I'm looking for the defense to improve, the offense to get in the end zone, the offensive line to protect Ryan Fitzpatrick, and for Fitzpatrick to show the world that this is his starting job and he's not going to give it up, even when Geno Smith is healthy. That's a big step for him. This game is a very big stepping stone for him because now he's got another week with the ones. He's going to play a full half of football. It's time for him to show that he's improving. You don't have to be great. Just show that you're improving week to week. That means that training camp is actually working. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show tonight. Thank Christian Dyer from Metro, Glenn Naughton from JetNation.com, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. And remember, you can hear us live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.